I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Nick Mullins, and this is the Rugby Tonight podcast. And we're on tour this week, this season, coming from various locations. And tonight, to kick us off, we're in my kitchen.
It's a lovely kitchen,
we are,
too.
We are, Hughes. This is my kitchen, isn't it?
And I've finally met Laconche as well.
Laconche, the big... Don't look
the French beast
online to see how much Laconche is, because I lied to my other half. Hugo's here largely because... it's good for expenses because he's my neighbour and he lives just around the corner. And we will be looking ahead. We're doing several things, actually. We'll be looking ahead to this weekend's Aviva Premiership, of course, on BT Sport Round 3. We'll also be drinking cups of Earl Grey tea, which get your approval.
Superb. So
like the tea.
Thank you.
And you have brought the chocolate hobnobs.
That's it. Chocolate chip. We got caramel and dark chocolate.
So I think we've covered everything. But before we crack on with the podcast, here's a little tease of what you can expect on this week's show. Martin Bayfield caught up with Gloucester's new signing from Bristol, Jason Woodward.
You know, for me, mentally sort of at the moment, just trying to do everything I can for Gloucester and to help us, you know, get another result on the weekend.
And Sarah has been to Bath.
This is Francois Lowe, and you're listening to the Rugby Tonight podcast. We've learned our lessons from last season. We've taken what we can from that, but we've put that to bed quickly and just moving forward, really.
So, bags to look forward to over the next half an hour or so, not just the Earl Grey and the Chocky Hobnobs, but it's been a strong start, particularly with the Chocky Hobnobs. You're one down already. One thing I've not noticed.
One down onto two, but... But yeah, rugby started Friday night. AJ Bell, not the best of viewing. Sale could have had the game out of sight by half time, but fair play to Newcastle. Started a season really in the manner which they finished off. And
how high can they finish, Hughes? Because I know Dean Richards is kind of playing down this top six thing, but they're building nicely, aren't they?
I think the only reason he's kind of trying to avoid those questions is to protect his players. They're a top six team. Don't want to get too excited round two, but 9 points already on the board. They're not a relegation team anymore. They're not into that conversation. If they finish in the top six and get a European spot next year, it's everything they deserve.
And we're going to be going with the Falcons to Philadelphia at the weekend. So we'll have a chat about that match against Saracens a bit later on. Four games on Saturday. And I guess the one that really caught the eye was Bath's win against Saracens, almost underlining that what happened at Welford Road was no flash in the pan.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think Bath have had plenty of excuses as to why they could have easily been 0-2 this season. You look at the fixture list, go away to Welford Road, a place they've not won since 03. Then they got the twice European champions back at home, loads of injuries, but... Bar's skill, just with sheer character, they've been able to get a couple of wins. At 77 minutes, Saracens managed to find their way into the game, and then Rocco Deguna, who else? But what a brilliant try it was, beating about five players.
Who called him Rocco Houdini?
I was
lounging by a pool last weekend. I cannot lie, so I didn't. But that was you, was it?
It was. I just
That's
got
a good line.
Just got a bit excited. It's funny, but when you saw his first try, for me, it kind of reminded me as to how I played rugby under 15s and how sometimes we overcomplicate rugby. Just give it to the fast lad, stood at number 10 and let him do his magic.
A lot of people are saying, why isn't Rocket and Goonie playing for England? And we had this chat a lot on and off air last season. And certainly last season, you were quite strong on why he wasn't playing for England.
Yeah, defensively, I just thought he wasn't consistent enough. International level, you get punished pretty quickly. This year... has my opinion changed? He's a wonderful player. And I think the only other player to score the type of try he scored at the weekend is probably only Christian Wade. He's shown a lot more this year, but in saying that, there's a huge amount of competition still out there.
The Gardens, Northampton against Leicester. I mean, so much that we could talk about from this match, but how do you sum up Saints' win?
Yeah, congratulations to them. Massive character was shown. I wouldn't have said they'd have had a crisis meeting after just round one, but there'd have been a huge amount of honesty and certainly needed. They didn't show up physically, mentally, didn't seem to be at the races, but to bounce back in the manner which they did, to deal with all that criticism internally as well as publicly, and actually, I thought there were streets ahead of Leicester at the weekend. They're fully back on track.
Yeah, I think the coaches had said, and the players have admitted it publicly, that they were told they were soft against Saracens on that opening weekend. And, you know, I'm not calling you soft youths for a minute, but you'll have been in those situations where you've taken a hiding from the coaches on the Monday morning, and the only place you can put it right is on the pitch the following weekend.
Absolutely right. I think it's one thing losing a game, but when you don't show anything in that game as to what you are, and Northampton's DNA is physicality, and it just wasn't there. But fair play to Jim. He's been under pressure last year, and, you know, people pointing the finger once again for him to be able to turn it around. That's just got to be their benchmark now for the rest of the season.
Quick word on Leicester. It's absurd for people to talk about panic stations, Joshua, isn't it?
I think so. When you look at the type of players and the quality of the coach and what they have, I didn't expect them to be 0-2 at the start of the season. Will they be in the top four? You wouldn't bet against them. They've got plenty enough quality. But unfortunately for me, the worrying sign is the two teams they faced so far this season have just beat them up physically. And you can have all the backline stars that you like. If you don't get it right up front, you're not going to win many games.
And that's the thing they've talked about as well in the summer, being more physical, carrying that extra physical edge. So that we know all about the backline. But it's got to start with the big blokes.
Yeah, and we saw that round one. You know, they had to win a line out to win the game, and they fluffed their lines. And then a week later at Franklin's Gardens, they just got beaten up. And that's worrying, but no doubt they're reacting the same manner Northampton did.
Irish were I was following this on Twitter, Paul's side, and certainly they were.
Were you on holiday?
I was on holiday. Did I mention that? Drinking tea, eating hobnobs. And actually, Irish seemed competitive for certainly the early stages of that match until the Chiefs pulled away a little bit.
It's a tough place to go. They're champions. They lost last week. They'd have been hurting. London Irish, I think their biggest problem is going to be injuries. They've got to keep people fit. And the effort they put into Twickenham, and my only question was whether they were going to be able to replicate that. And they clearly weren't. But it's no disgrace to lose to the champions. Not many people go down there, win many points. But fair play to Exeter to get the result and the 5 points. They've got their season back on track as well.
And John Kingston would have seen one or two injuries to concern Quinns after the match. But John Kingston would have seen a response as well from them after what happened at Twickenham on the opening weekend, beating Gloucester.
Yeah, really good game management, actually. Danny Kerr kicked really well during the game. But yeah, I think whenever you lose your opening game or lose any game, you just want to see progression, you want to see a reaction, and he certainly got it from that. If any of you haven't seen Charlie Walker's try from that game, that's everything what Quinns is about. Counter-attack, all started with a young fella, Marcus Smith. Danny Kerr had involvement with Mike Brown, and then Charlie Walker, who started his second game. It seems to be a bit of a breakthrough season for him, a really good and much-needed result for them.
Marcus Smith is going to be busy as well. We saw him start at Twickenham 2 weeks ago, but now poor old Dimitri Katrakilis is injured. I mean, just awful for him, awful for the club.
Yeah, I mean, every injury is unfortunate, but I mean, he had a groin injury through the summer, played 15 minutes, and he got sin-binned after 40 seconds making his debut. But to get the number 10 shirt at home and fracture a bone in his throat, that's a pretty severe injury. Just wish him well in his recovery.
Actually, a quick word about Ronaldo Bothmer, because I know, talking to John Kingston, that almost he was the newcomer that excited him most of all, a real beast in the back row, and he's going to be missing for a while as well.
Yeah, he got injured in the A-League game, broke his arm, unfortunately, for a second time. But I guess what's really important for him is that he's just back for those autumn internationals. The look of the squad is to have international quality stars when the English guys go away, and once again, you just wish him really well in his recovery.
What do you take from Worcester Wasps on the Sunday? Again, it took Wasps a little bit of time to put the game away. It wasn't until the last few minutes that they scored those two tries.
Yeah, Worcester disappointed, and right from the word go, found themselves behind the eight ball. Nick Shonart breaking his ankle after 25 seconds, and Wasps were ruthless, actually, going after Bioalo in the scrum, although he did score a try and played really well. But for Wasps, it wasn't a very good team performance, but it just once again highlights the star quality which they have. And a gorgeous try from Marcus Watson and a sublime chip from Danny Cipriani and lovely finish for Josh Bassett, which capped off a really good week for him because he had his first child this week.
Congratulations. Do you know what my highlight was?
Tell me.
Oh, you know what it was. What were you thinking?
Not much, really.
It was a good catch. I was pleased
with the catch, but funnily enough, I seem to always get carried away, and I'm not going to implicate myself too much, but I just...
Well, you just dropped it on Jack Singleton's head. I mean, let's be fair. You take us to court, whatever you want to do, mind you, but, you know, that's what happened. And Jack will be witness number one.
Do you know what? Fair play to him, because he ended up winning that next line-out, and I'd have been pretty upset at myself, let alone him, but we had a bit of banter on Twitter, and I think he appreciated my accuracy.
You were good. You were a good listener, actually. I've watched that match back, and... Fair play. You almost maybe came up with the line of the season as well so far. Talking about Christian Scotland Williamson. Do you remember what you said?
I do. Got carried away. Absolute monster hit. And I was looking down at his name, double-barreled name. Obviously stood out on the programme. Christian Scotland Williamson. I said, he's got the name of a posh boy, but he hits like a thug. And he did. Absolutely, I forgot who it was. Cut him in half, and what an introduction that was for him to Premiership life this year. But
do you find, by the way, that when you're working with Flatman, you come out with lines like that a bit more readily than otherwise?
Sometimes, yeah. Do you know what? Flats is an infectious character, and I mean that in a positive way, that's for sure. But we get very excited, and the game at times wasn't really flowing, and perhaps that affects our attention span, and we create our own fun if the rugby's not entertaining ourselves.
Actually, that's really dangerous, isn't it? Because and folks who watch us back home will know this, but a poor game tends to bring out the worst in us.
Yeah,
you almost forget you're on telly sometimes, which is quite dangerous.
It's tough, but hey, if you watch us on BT Sport, you know your rugby, and so we can't sell a poor game to people who know their rugby. So all we try and do is have fun with it. It is just rugby at the end of the day.
But as you said, check this, Alex Reader, out of nowhere, just empties him. Christian Scotland Williamson, he's got the name of a posh boy, but hitting like a thug. Brilliant.
Ali had a good line as well on Ellis Genge, which one or two of you may have seen from the Gardens. That charging run that he had, was that the moment that he kind of swept aside Dylan Hartley as well. Ali said, like a baby rhino with a dart up his backside.
This is Genge. Oh, Genge, like a baby rhino with a dart up its backside, just charging into the opposition.
You don't get that anywhere else, do you? You don't. You can laugh, Hughes, and you can have another chocolate digestive, but we do not get that quality of commentary anywhere
else. I don't think so. I remember listening to it, and I was in stitches.
On to this week's news. Let's start with England's autumn fixtures in 2018, November next year. And these will be the last set of home fixtures against the Southern Hemisphere lot before the World Cup. So they're significant, and they've gone for the full house. South Africa at the start of the month, then the All Blacks, then Japan, Eddie Jones' old team, and the hosts, of course, of the World Cup, and then Australia on the 24th of November. What's the thinking behind that, Jürgen?
Really well picked. I'm actually going to start with this autumn internationals, and they're playing Australia, Samoa, Argentina. Eddie Jones already made the comments that he may not play all his Lions guys. And when you look at it, no disrespect to those nations, he may give himself an opportunity just to tinker his squad and perhaps look at some of these guys. So we roll the clock on 12 months later. This might be not an experimental year. You want to win every single game, but you'd imagine he'll probably widen his squad a little bit. But then when we get to
Hang on, just on that, what are his priorities this autumn? What's he looking for, do you think?
I think he wants to test the strength and depth of his squad. And by playing New Zealand next year, it's a genuine statement that by this time next year, we need to be in business. I need to know my squad, and we're going to go up against the top three sides in the world. Having New Zealand playing them second, so traditionally you'd always play New Zealand last, they'd kind of be your showcase. But at the end of the November internationals, you're shattered. You've normally picked up a third of your squad are injured, and you never ever give your best opportunity. So to play South Africa first, hopefully create a little bit of momentum, you're test hardened by the time you play New Zealand. Having playing them second, I think, is the perfect positioning for it. And then it's a true test of the two best sides in the world.
I ought to know this, and shamefully I don't. They may well never have played at Twickenham before, but to have Japan as part of that run of games as well is such a great thing for them. After we know what they did at the World Cup last time out, but if they're now starting to crop up regularly on England's calendar, that can only be a good thing, can't it?
Absolutely. It was great to see Wales go out and play a couple of tier two nations this summer. For Japan to come up to Twickenham, that's amazing, especially when you think of a year later they'll be hosting the World Cup. So really good business, I think, from the RFU, and great to see that the international game certainly being widened.
Another interesting line this week was from former Quinn scrum half Carl Dixon, retired at the back end of last season, to become a professional referee. And he was talking on the radio, talking on Five Live this week, talking about the fitness that you need. Different type of fitness, he says. But in terms of running around, I'm fitter as a referee than I was as a player. And he was very fit as a player. So the question is, are referees fitter than players?
See, Carl was a guy that loved his fitness. He certainly was... he just liked staying in shape for all the wrong reasons. He was always beach ready. But I think that's a bit of a sweeping statement of all the referees.
I'm just pushing the digesters a little bit further. Oh, it's a musical box, by the way.
It's a beautiful chime to those.
I've brought out our best musical
box. Not only do they taste good, they sound brilliant as well. But yeah. I don't think all referees are fitter than rugby players. But I'd back him to be one of the fittest guys out there, that's for sure. But he says he's in the best shape he's been. He's fitter as a referee. Well, he's not having his head kicked in every single week. So all he's got to do is run around and do some weights. But he's a guy who's doing incredibly well, been mentored by Wayne Barnes. And they've got high hopes for him. Hopefully, if he goes well, he could potentially be refereeing a Premiership fixture before Christmas. And that's exciting for him.
I think Richard Wigglesworth responded on Twitter by saying we had a ref in last season who was laying down the law and throwing some challenges around. And apparently, we don't know the name.
Yeah.
So we can, you know.
Who do you think it is?
JP.
That's a good chat, actually. That's a good shout.
So I'd imagine that JP's pretty quick.
Yeah. I don't know what his endurance is like. I'd say he'd be more of a 200-metre sprinter rather than a 800-metre runner.
When you were playing, who were the referees that impressed you fitness-wise?
Wayne Barnes, just naturally. And I have to say, one way of, for me, kind of really deciding as to whether referees fit or not, is just, of course, they keep up with play. But secondly, they're able to have good conversations with you. If you've ever been to the gym and worked really hard, then try and get on the phone and have a conversation with a mate. These referees have to keep up with, imagine keeping up with Marcus Watson at the weekend, making a decent decision. So it is imperative for those guys to be really fit, but Wayne Barnes is always very fit.
Barnes, he runs by pretty much by my front door, actually, on the way home from work. I don't know whether he does it every night, but he works up in the city and he lives around the corner from you in Twickenham. And whenever I'm coming out of the kebab hut, he's running home. So he's as fit as a fiddle.
He certainly is. He does a lot of training, actually, in Richmond Park. He's invited me to a couple of sessions, but I'm about 30 kgs heavier than that guy, and certainly not as interesting.
Poor old Sam Warburton. Another news line this week. Out for 4 months. What is it, and you've been on Lions tours, what is it about Lions tours that lead to injuries like this off the back of them?
There's just no rest. You think of that tour to New Zealand, it's probably the most examining of all tours in world rugby. To come off the back of a domestic season, autumn international, Six Nations, no break, and then you're into the hardest 7 weeks of that year, potentially of your career, only to do it all over again. You look at someone like Owen Farrell, I don't remember the last time he had 2 months out of the game in the last 4 or 5 years. It's just so tough. In 2009, when I went to South Africa, I think there was 8 English guys that went on that tour. 6 of us came back that next season and had major surgery. It's a brutal game. You think about it, there's some dynamics in rugby that will never change. It'll always be 80 minutes. The pitch size will remain the same, but the forces on it are just forever just getting greater. People are bigger, faster, stronger. It's cliche, but it's absolutely true. But once again, with Sam, quality player, we're just desperate for him to be fit, just the likes of a Manu Tuilagi. Just hope that he can get back and stay fit.
Yeah, we should mention Manu as well. Want to mention as well the start this weekend of the Women's Premier League, the Tyrrell Premier 15s, as we're going to get used to calling it, starts this weekend. 10 clubs up and down the country. And those of you who would have watched the Women's World Cup on the telly, followed it on the radio over the last month or so, will know that good things are happening in women's rugby. And this league is, according to the RFU, central to it.
Of course. And as you said, you covered it. The Women's Rugby World Cup, I thought was gripping. I thought some of the games were insane, actually. You look at the final, that was one of the most competitive games seen in a long while. And for us, I think it's deeply important that if we want to support the game, or certainly we all talk about supporting the game and want it to grow, there's ways in which you can do that. And one way is just get down to your local club and watch these girls, because they are brilliant athletes.
Yeah, go along. There will be a game near you. If you're heading to Welford Road this weekend, one of the four featured games, by the way, with us on BT Sport, you may well see Gloucester's new signing from Bristol, Jason Woodward, and he's been speaking to Bafes earlier in the week. Here are the best bits.
Now, your accent might suggest to some people there isn't a strong link to Gloucester, but there is. You touched on it just a few minutes ago. Tell us what your link is to this place.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to come over to Hartbury about 10 years ago on a school exchange, and ended up, falling in love with the place. And about 6 or 7 months later, I came back and started university here. So, I've done a bit of schooling over here and lived over here for a bit, and made some friends for life who... guys back then that I'm still keeping in touch with and catching up with today. So, it just feels like home here.
But then the lure of New Zealand takes you back, and then you come back to England, back to Bristol. Bristol, clearly a difficult season last season, relegated out of the Premiership, but plenty of investment, plenty of positive talk about what they want to achieve, but you decided not to stay and come to King's Home. How close were you to staying at Bristol and following the new plan?
Yeah, I think it was, it was always a tough decision. To decide to move up here, but at the same time I sort of had high aspirations to come over here to the UK and play in the Premiership, and I guess sort of for me 27 years old, that taking a year in the champ would have was something I sort of didn't really want to go through. And then with the opportunity to come to Gloucester and come back to my roots here in England was something I couldn't sort of turn down. It was I've always sort of kept an eye on how Gloucester have been going over the past few years. I played rugby back in the day with Henry Trinder and Tom Savage, so to sort of be back out in the field with them is pretty cool feeling.
The message we got from some of the players early on in the season in the build-up to that opening game was Johan Ackerman isn't the man you want to disappoint. You don't want to upset him. It's almost like upsetting your parents if you upset him. Do you feel that? He's so passionate about it, you can't let him down.
Yeah, he's sort of, across some of the teams I've been a part of, I've had, some coaches have been coaches and some coaches have been mates, and I think he's got a really good balance between the two. He's very approachable. He's very knowledgeable. You can sit down and have a chat with him and have a laugh about something, or, be quite serious and talk about footy. And, yeah, mate, he's got a good balance, and I think he's going to be great for us this year.
You were one of the rare bright lights in Bristol season last season. You come here, hopefully results will come Gloucester's way. As results start to improve, selectors start to appear. Eddie Jones, in his bobble hat, starts to appear down at King's Home watching players. What about an England call-up? Is Eddie Jones a man you could, if you got the call from him, is he a man that you could play rugby for?
Absolutely. It's, for me personally, it's part of the decision to come over, move back to the UK, and I was lucky enough to be included on a couple of camps last year, and to be sort of included in that environment and get to train with Eddie and the rest of the guys at that top level was an awesome feeling, and I felt like I learnt quite a bit from that, and something I'm sort of hoping to get a bit more of.
That passion burns bright, burns intensely in you to put on a white shirt, play for England.
Yeah, absolutely. I've sort of over the past, I think I've been in back in the UK since last November, and I think you've got to take a team first approach. Everything I sort of do, you know, at the moment is to try and help us perform in the cherry and white jersey. You know, and whether that's at fullback, on the wing, in the midfield, or not on the field at all, you know, the team performance comes first. So, you know, it's nice to sort of have those individual goals in the background and something to work hard for. But, you know, for me, mentally, sort of at the moment, just trying to do everything I can for Gloucester and to help us, you know, get another result on the weekend.
We talk about that mental approach. What do you do to get rugby out of your brain? Because it's non-stop through the season. But for a young lad, it can't be rugby all the time.
Yeah, I've sort of moved into the country a little bit, living down sort of in the outskirts. So got a little puppy, a little German Shepherd, 7-month-old puppy called Kevin.
Kevin,
yeah. I thought I'd stick with like an old man name for that. I've got a cat called George as well, so...
How do Kevin and George get on?
Kevin and George, yeah, no, they get on right. They fight a bit.
Sounds like a sitcom, Kevin and George. It's a grumpy old man.
Quite fun to sort of sit there and watch them fight and
get
amongst it. But yeah, mate, just go for walks with the dog and out to brunch with the missus and stuff like that. It's, you know, it's slow sort of life down there, but something I'm enjoying a lot of.
And a pilot as well, I hear.
Yeah.
Training.
Yeah, training, doing a diploma in aviation. So I've been doing that for a fair while now. I've done about 60 odd hours flying time and about 15 solo. So, you know, maybe if I get injured here one day, I'll land the footy ball in for kickoff one time.
Excellent. You'll have your own landing pad out in the car park.
Yeah,
that would be cool.
Yeah, I haven't got a car park yet, so a helipad would be a bit of a push, but I'll see what the office staff can do.
Great stuff. Well, you've made a blistering start to your career at Gloucester. It's fantastic to see. Thanks for giving us your time.
Cheers, mate.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Jason Wood caught the eye in a losing cause at Bristol last season, and I thought when he made that move to Gloucester, it looked like a good one.
Yeah, and there's one way you can get the home fans to like you, and that's to score a winning try on debut, and he was brilliant in that game, a game which looked to be going away, but you need big players, give you big moments. He's certainly one of those, and as you've rightly said, Bristol last season, he was fantastic, a real shining light. And
he plays with his head up, doesn't he? He doesn't see the bodies, he looks for the gaps in between them, which is one of those old things that you would have thought about when you were playing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and the other thing about him is he's brave. He backs himself. It doesn't matter where he is. I think he's got such a good skill set that he's not afraid to run the ball from anywhere. And sometimes you need that spark, and there's plenty of good players in that Gloucester team. But beyond his spark, he gives you that security. And, you know, I love his attitude and his positive style of playing rugby.
There's a little bit, I don't know, there may well be Gloucester fans who disagree with this, but there's a little bit of the Ollie Morgan about him. He's maybe not quite as streamlined as Ollie was, not quite as willy-wee, but that threat that he will pose from 15 all season.
Yeah, Ollie famed for his counter-attacking ability and security in the air. Well, Jace Woodward, I think he adds to that a really big boot as well. It's that calming influence at the back, but you're right. Ollie Morgan was a Gloucester legend. Jason started his journey, and there's absolutely no reason as to why he can't be there and be one of their great heroes, especially this season. They're going to look for players like him.
I thought what was great about the way Johan Ackerman responded to victory on the opening night was how he didn't get carried away. So it's almost incumbent on us not to get too carried away by the manner of the defeat at the Stoop last week.
Absolutely right. But also, because they won the game in the 87th minute or whenever it was, I've forgotten now, he was probably the only coach in round one that celebrated. Everyone's so desperate now to, well, I'm not bothered, this is what I expect. He was high-fiving and clapping, but of course he's absolutely right. Speaking to lots of guys before the game, and he's a guy that's coming with a brilliant attitude. What changes can you make in 3 weeks? Perhaps not a huge amount on the pitch, but what you can instill is a culture and a belief, and that's exactly what he's done.
And they've also got signings like Owen Williams, Fraser Balmain to come in, Morgan and Atkinson as well. We say it every season, but they're in a reasonable position, you would say.
They are. They've certainly added to their squad. And you know, you look at the likes of Ross Moriarty, what the summer would have done for him. There is no reason when you look at their squad, when you look at their following, their support, always sold out, as to why they shouldn't be a top four club. They've just got to find that consistency.
Let's snip that out and put it into next season's podcast, because it might be just as applicable then. I hope not, for Gloucester's sake, because, you know, a strong Gloucester means it's a strong Premiership. And King's Home, when it's sailing on the high seas, really is someplace to go along to, isn't it?
a place I used to love playing at. I used to love going over to the shed and warming up there, just knowing that pressure was coming. I could never drop a high ball, the Eels, and I dropped a fair few of those in my career, but a brilliant rugby club.
Jason Woodward's Gloucester at Welford Road against Leicester, one of our offerings on Saturday, BT Sport 2 and 4K UHD at 2:30. First for us, though, this weekend, Friday night from the Gardens, Northampton against Bath on BT Sport 2, 4K UHD if you're fully equipped. And Sarah has been down to Farley House this week to have a chat with the Bath boys ahead of the game. Here are the best bits.
But Francois, 2 from 2, and you've already beaten two of last season's semi-finalists. It's just a pretty decent start to the season, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely the start we would have hoped for. You know, beating two of the top sides like that, definitely a lot of confidence within the sides. You know, but I think at no stage will we sort of rest on our laurels. You know, we understand this is a long season. I think our biggest challenge last season was consistency. You know, it's not good enough just to beat the top teams, but you got to try and beat everyone, or at least try to beat as many teams as possible. So, you know, hopefully we can keep up with that form, that consistency, and get a few more wins under the belt.
But I mean, to beat the teams that you've beaten, and in the manner that you've done it as well, with so many players still injured, that must add to the whole confidence and feel-good factor around this place at the moment.
Yeah, sure. I think we've got a decent amount of depth within our side, and, you know, the fact that we still have guys coming back from injuries is very promising, and you know, it's something that we, you know, can take confidence from again. I think we worked pretty hard in the pre-season to make sure everyone's up to speed, and I think the guys that have you know, got the opportunities so far have really taken their chance. You know, a lot of the young guys have really put their hands up. Guys like you know, Max Clark's really stepped up to the plate. You know, and a lot of the young guys are just rearing to go as well.
Do you think maybe the both Saracens, I guess, and Leicester, were they games you may have lost last season?
Sure. You know, I think they definitely showed an element of resilience. You know, something we do pride ourselves on, or at least try to work towards, that, you know, when it does get really tough, that, you know, we're not going to sort of buckle under the bus there and you know, fade out. You know, we've learned our lessons from last season. We've taken what we can from that. But we've put that to bed quickly and just moving forward, really.
And how are you feeling personally at the start of a brand new season? It's probably the first time in a while where you've had like a full pre-season, is it?
Yeah, it's the first time in 6 or 7 years.
There you go.
body feels good.
Relaxed, had a nice summer.
Yeah, first time I've started a season here. Played in the first game of the season. It's good. It's great to be a part of the team. You know, this time of the season, in the past, you kind of sort of enter a little bit later, and you often miss that emotional ride, or at least that culture building that takes place pre-season and the start of the season. You know, just looking back at the last 2 weeks, to have been involved in those two games is massive. You know, we shared some special moments, and I'm sure those feelings, or at least I hope those feelings, will carry us through some of the more difficult games to come.
And in terms of kind of your leadership qualities, what kind of words of wisdom are you giving Matt in his season as skipper?
I've been trying to get into his mind that less is more when it comes to training, or at least over 30s don't have to train on a Monday, but they'll have none of that. So I guess we just stuck in it you know, all year long. No, Matt's a good guy. You know, it's a great opportunity to lead the club, and you know, hopefully he'll do a good job.
Well, Matt, 2 from 2, and you've beaten two of last season's semi-finalists already, so it's a pretty decent start to the season.
Yeah, it's gone well for us. Obviously, when the fixtures came out, we knew it would be a challenging, you know, start to the season. Good defence has led the way, I think, with that. Leicester, I think we were down to 12 men at one point. The Saracens were down to 14 men at one point, so it's been testing. But yeah, no, we're really happy with where we are as a club.
The mentality was questioned a little bit last season when you were losing those tight matches, and, yeah, and possibly two games that you've won this season may well have been games that you would have lost last season. So, kind of, what's been tweaked there?
So yeah, we've spoke a lot this year about the mental side of it, and how, I guess, we've not been as resilient as we wanted to. You know, Tabs and Todd have spoken about that. There was a lot of times last year where we were tested and we kind of went what we call the red zone and the blue zone, and we kind of went into the red zone, we started to not necessarily panic, but we lost clarity and focus and what we were doing well. And this year it was kind of right, when we get tested, how do we remain calm, how do we get out of those problems, and the work we've done, you know, so far has paid dividends. And the other side of it is the culture that we're building here. that we've kind of changed in the way we're playing is that boys want to fight for each other. And like I said, the 12 minute Leicester, the last 10 minutes was, for me, I had to watch it. Obviously, I was one of the sin bins, but
we won't mention that.
Yeah, it was you know, extremely proud to see those boys putting their body on the line for each other.
Yeah, and you mentioned the defence already, because I think that probably is the area of your game that everyone's been impressed with in the last couple of rounds.
Yeah.
Have you kind of tweaked anything there, or is it just, you know, mentally?
Yeah, we I mean, we spoke last year and we said about it, you know, when we looked at the top four teams, and you know, we said, when you think of Saracens defence, what do you think of? And we were like, aggressive, come off the line hard at you. And we said about Exeter, and we said the same. And Leicester, and we said the same. And they said, how about Bath's defence? And the word that we kept bouncing around, I guess, was, we're passive. You know, we were, in a way, I guess, we were happy to defend. We were comfortable that we trusted the defensive principles we had. And almost, we like I said, we were just too happy to defend. So this year, we wanted to get off the line, put teams under pressure, you know, force errors, force the pass, and, you know, capitalise on that. And hopefully you've seen that in the first couple of games.
It's the first Premiership win at Welford Road since 2003 for a Bath side. And what was the atmosphere like post-match?
Yeah, it was crazy, I think. I mean, I've never won there. So I've drawn twice and they've scored in the last couple of minutes. And I remember speaking to the boys at half-time and saying, look, it's not over yet. It's not going to take 60 minutes, it's going to take 80 minutes. And then JJ said to me, when I got yellow card and he had to defend at the end, he was like, if we lose this, I'm coming for you. So yeah, it was awesome, you know. Again, we didn't get too carried away because we knew we had a short turnaround to the Saracens game. But yeah, it was pretty special. I think it sounds a bit surreal to have won in the manner we did. But yeah, no, boys were over the moon and ready for the Saris game.
So how surreal was it then this weekend when you beat Saris at home? Or was it a little bit
expected
to win at home?
No, never against the Saracens team. Obviously, we try to win all our home games. The mood this week was a bit odd, I guess, because obviously we'd beaten Saracens, but we almost threw it away. And we could quite easily have lost it if it wasn't for a bit of Fijian magic from Rocco on two occasions. So, you know, it was disappointing because we spoke the messages at half-time about discipline and stuff like that. And then I think the first 10 minutes of the second half, we give away five penalties. Mm. So we had to learn from it, but we'd rather win and learn than lose and learn. So, yeah, happy, but aware that we had a lot of things to learn from.
Got so many injuries at the moment. Yeah. So to win against teams that you've won against and in the manner that you have, just how much confidence does that give you once you get a full complement of players back out on the pitch?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I think we've got a word of our physio team. They must be rubbish, I think, the injuries we've got. We give them stick. But no, like I said, it's picked up from last year. Just a bit of a freakish amount we had, and they all seem to be in the same positions. So it's difficult, but it's also helped the younger boys. Like, you look at Zach Mercer last year, you know, we got a few injuries in the back row, he got his chance, and, you know, to see how well he did. So those boys are getting their chances, and when they're called upon again, they've got a lot of experience to draw upon. And it's also, like you said, it's a huge thing to think that we've still got, you know, a few internationals out injured that are going to come back and boost the squad. So the cavalry's going to arrive at some point, but at the moment we're quite comfortable with the boys that are doing their job.
I mean, your skipper, your general out there, but I just want to know, in terms of kind of the leadership squad or players that you've got, how strong is that in this team at the moment?
Yeah, we picked a few boys, senior boys, but also quite younger boys to bring along for the journey and give them some experience. So we've got quite a good mix of players. You know, it ranges from people like Khan Fortalili, who's, you know, played around the Premiership and plays about 100 games a year, to people like Jack Walker, under-20s captain, and, you know, I think it's his second year now. So they're doing really well, and it takes a lot of pressure off me. We've spoken as a group that we want to be about performance, and that's where we're going to push the development rather than off-field stuff. We'll leave that to the coaches. But yeah, at the moment, like I said, things are going well, but we're aware that we're 2 weeks into the season and there's a long way to go yet.
Is it a role that you're embracing? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I really am. It's new to me, so I'm, you know, I've got to keep learning as well. You know, Hoops has thrown about 5 or 6 books at me to read.
What sort of books?
We read Legacy, the All Black one in the off-season. There's another one called The Captain's Class. So I'm just kind of studying at the moment because, you know, it's, being captain is a huge honour, but you've got to, you know, you've got to fill the role. And, you know, Hoops did a tremendous job. Guy Mercer did a tremendous job. So it's up to me to keep pushing forward and keep learning myself, because it's hard for me to say to the boys, we need to get better if I'm not living my own words.
What sort of captain do you think you are, and what sort of captain do you think you want to be?
A successful one would be nice. I'm not sure yet. I mean, it's an easy job at the moment because the boys I've got around me. I want to be able to depend on some of the other boys in terms of, you know, someone who's not personally, I've not won anything, or I've, you know, no international caps. You know, I need to be able to talk to Anthony Watson, JJ, Toby Faletel, Reece, Khan, you know, all those boys that have been away on Lion tours or been successful international duty, that, you know, push them forward as well, that they need to, you know, develop and, you know, give clear messages to the rest of the squad. So, you know, I just want to try and get everyone involved, bring everyone along for the journey, and, you know, hopefully that takes me along with it.
Doing something right at the moment.
Well, two games in, we're doing all right.
Hughes, Bath 2 from 2. They've been brilliant. What will constitute success for them this season, do you think?
They've got to finish top four. They must do. They were so near to that last year. The last couple of games just got away from them. Not sure whether it was fatigue or injuries or whatever, but they had their excuses. This year, they've not hidden behind any of the excuses. And you look at their injury bill, especially in the tight five, considering their fixture list, Leicester away, not won there since 2003, double champions, Saracen European champions at home. They could quite conceivably have been 0 from 2, but they haven't been. And I've seen an all-court game, not just their star players, your likes of your Faletels, your Watsons, your Josephs, your Priestlands, but your ever-present Matt Banahan. Regardless of where he plays so well for them. And it's so important for them to have that mix.
Yeah, Chris Cook as well.
Chris Cook's been brilliant. Got injured at the weekend, but Futi Lee comes on. I mean, that's brilliant depth in that position. But yeah, Chris Cook, round one, was a star player. But they've got everything. They've got everything. They've got the infrastructure, the stadium. They've got brilliant training facility at Farley House and the players to be able to achieve something. It's funny, actually, because we've seen a few different captains this season. So we've got James Horwell at Harlequins, Matt Garvey at Bath. And the one thing about him, regardless of his talent ability and his no-nonsense attitude, and he really is in the thick of things, and he kind of embodies that Bath spirit. He's there every single game. He's unfortunately not going to play for England. And how valuable is it to have a consistent captain all year? He's been brilliant the last couple of weeks. If they can sort their discipline issues out, as well as get some bodies back and they're going to need them, they can really mount a serious threat on that top four.
How much are they going to miss Tabai Matson, the coach who's heading home for family reasons?
He's one of these... Hey, he's not always in front of the camera. We speak to Todd Blackadder, but he's the guy, you speak to the players, and I chatted some after the game at the weekend. He's the guy that sets the drills, plans the training. He's their energy in the training, culture, all the rest of it. And it's a little bit like a 9-10 partnership with him and Blackadder. He does his job so Blackadder's able to deal with the board and sort out recruitment for next season, but he makes sure that the culture and everything's set in place so they're able to perform on Saturday. So it's desperately important for them not just to get the same kind of quality of coaching, but someone that can come in and fit into that Bath mould as well as keeping that synergy between Todd. But he's a massive loss.
It is interesting, actually, because we're lucky enough to, because we don't do proper jobs, so we've got time to do this, to go along and watch teams train during the week. And if you ever you watch Bath train at Farley House, all the coaches are on the pitch. Todd Blackadder's on the pitch with his boots on, prowling around. Toby Booth, Darren Edwards... But Tabai Matson seems to be the bloke who winds the clock. He's flying around all of them. It's his voice that you hear almost above anybody else's.
Yeah, and do you know what? The role which I like about him is Saturday is a product of what you do Monday to Friday, and it's his voice and it's all the detail which he puts in which allows those guys to be out on a Saturday. Come Saturday, we don't see him, we don't speak to him. No. He doesn't.
He's down
look
on
for
the touchline, actually, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. His work's done. His work's done by Friday. Lads, go out and play. And I love that. He hides behind it all, but yeah, he's been at the core of everything good.
A bit of chatter about how they might replace Tabai Matson. Dave Williams is a name that you've heard. He's with the Cheetahs in Bloemfontein at the moment, but he's had experience of Bath previously.
He has. Without trying to perhaps reveal a bit too much, I think there may have been conversations, and the conversation which have been had, and speaking to a couple of players there, massively excited if he was to come back, because he made a huge impact when he was first at Bath.
Now, we've got to get Shimmy on, actually, because I need to go and pack my case, because I've got to fly to the States. Yes, have I mentioned that I'm flying to the States this weekend? I'm flying to the States. Off to Philly. Newcastle against Saracens. It's the second one of these Premiership goes stateside games. You went to the one a couple of years ago between Saris and London Irish. Good idea, bad idea?
Great idea. Absolutely great idea. You could ask Sarah Elgin, she'd say it was a terrible idea because she had a day shopping with me, but that's completely separate to
you
the
went
rugby.
Didn't you?
I did, yeah. Got myself a couple of nice coats. And why not? The pound was stronger that time, but anyway, we're in Brexit mode and perhaps not the same, but I think it's fantastic for the Premiership to go and sow its seeds across the pond in America. We've seen it in the Pro 14. It's great for this game to expand. And if, you know, I'm so proud about what we have as a product. I think it is the toughest and the best league in the world. It's the fastest growing sport in America. And for those guys that tune into NBC and listen to our coverage on BT Sport, firstly, I apologise. But secondly, you now get that opportunity to see it live.
It's also interesting as well, you talk to the suits at clubs, and more of them, I know Saracens do, and certainly Harlequins do, they're putting down roots in the States. They see the States as a very useful source of player development. Quins, I know, are in California at the moment, working hard to develop over there. Irrespective of whether rugby grows as a sport in the United States, Premiership clubs are busy mining what those athletes might have to offer.
Yeah, I was monitoring, Mike Friday, sounds quite creepy actually, Mike Friday's Twitter
account. Is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, I tried to downplay what I was doing. But, I mean, rugby's never going to be the number one sport in America, but what it can sit, where it can sit is an overspill to a lot of the talent that can't quite make it at basketball, NFL. And if people don't make it and they still want to play in a contact sport and a physical sport, then rugby could be that perfect tonic to it. And we would gladly accept some of these star athletes.
And I know that Sarries and the Falcons haven't just been over there this week eating cheesesteak sandwiches.
Which you will be tomorrow.
Which I will be tomorrow. They've been spreading the word. They've had coaching clinics as well. They've been embracing the sporting environment.
Yeah, and it's so important, I think, for the Premiership to feel organic like that. It's not a case of fly in, play the game, get on a jet and fly back. And it's great they're able to get out into the community and really spread all the good word about the Premiership.
Actually, worth saying that I picked this up during the Women's World Cup, that women's rugby, from this term in the States, has become a varsity sport because they need, for quota reasons, to have a bigger percentage of women athletes involved in that varsity system that we understand in the States, that American football, basketball, baseball uses. It's actually women's rugby that has become a varsity sport, and it means that millions and millions of dollars are now being pushed into the women's game over there. So I wonder, actually, whether a little bit like football, soccer over there, it might be the women's game that is the market leader.
That's great to see. I think it's always amazing when women's sport, we're following their lead. And what an opportunity for them to make a statement. We've seen the growth of women's rugby this summer. You covered it extremely well.
Thank you.
Good on them. Good on you.
That was excellent, actually, in fairness. It wasn't just me, but it was largely me. Right, we're going to, because I have to pack, because I'm going to Philadelphia. I might not have mentioned that. But let's look ahead to this weekend, Hughes. And we've got this predictor thing going at btsport.com/predictor, where it is revealed how little we so-called experts, pundits, know about the game. Because I don't think I've managed to get more than 50% of the games right over the opening 2 weeks.
Me and you both. It's making an absolute mug of me. Yeah. It's creating me a lot of stress, a lot of headaches, but it's good fun to get involved.
It is. And if you want to get involved, if you want to try and predict the margin of victory for whichever of the teams you favour this weekend, then head along to btsport.com/predictor. We are rubbish at it, but it's not going to stop us looking at the half a dozen games that we've got this weekend. Let's start with that one at the Gardens, Saints against Bath on the Friday night.
Wow, well, both teams going in with a huge amount of momentum. Northampton desperately need to win it, don't they? It's probably more of an important fixture to them than Bath, but for Bath, it's Tavon Matson's last game. And we know what emotion can do for anyone. So, I mean, at this moment in time, I'm meant to give a prediction and I can't. No. I really can't.
Right. If we're a couple of days further on and we know what the teams are, then I would probably say I quite fancy Exeter to beat Worcester at Six Ways. But such has been my form of predicting so far. It's almost certainly, therefore, going to be the Warriors. But what do you reckon?
That's the one game I'm fairly confident in, and that's not based on my form this season so far. Exeter looked to have found their mojo after a slow start round one. Worcester looked like they were punctured on Saturday. I fancy Exeter.
Sale Irish. Sale came into the season with such high hopes, and they played well enough at the Rico on the opening weekend, but question marks raised by what happened last Friday.
Yeah, a hallmark of them is their set piece, and it didn't function at the weekend. Faf de Klerk's been on fire. I think James O'Connor's back fit for Friday night, so he'll obviously add that extra bit of stardust. But London Irish, they've been impressive, even in defeat at Sandy Park. They'll fancy their chances. This will be one of the games in this opening section of the Premiership, which they'll look to go up and target. Power game at Sale up against a power game in London Irish really could be anyone's.
We've got two games on Saturday. Both of them are on the telly. BT Sport 2, 4K UHD from 2:30 at Welford Road. Leicester against Gloucester.
Well, I'll keep it brief. Inconceivable to think that Leicester lose two games in a row at home. So you've got to back Leicester, haven't you?
Newcastle Saris in Philadelphia from 9:00 UK time Saturday evening. It looks a fantastic stadium, actually. I've seen pictures of it. There's a great big bridge next door to it. I'll be a little bit more eloquent come Saturday night, but a great big bridge is as good as I can do at the moment. But Falcon Saracens, does the trip and all that disruption mean that a Falcons win is more likely or less likely? Or would it make no difference?
I don't think so. You've just got to be professional, and the coaches are there certainly to make sure that the guys aren't in holiday mode. They're there to get business done. Newcastle started really well, and Saracens will be hurting. A few more of their lines will filter into their side, and they've got 100% record out there. Well, they've only played once out there, but they haven't lost. But yeah, Saracens will massively fancy their chances.
Actually, just talking about Tani Takalua, while we're giving medals to those who started, we're only a fortnight into the season, but crikey, he started well.
Powerful unit, always looking to break, but that doesn't take anything away from his service. And he kicks goals. You've pretty much got the full package. He's a big old unit, isn't he? Have you seen his quads? He's been outstanding this year. And he's one of these players that only Dean Richards could sign. Honestly, he's probably not a frontline nine in terms of profile, but he has come and he's had a massive impact at Newcastle.
Yeah, fits in wonderfully. And the final game of the weekend, again, it's on the telly, BT Sport 1 from 2:30, from the Rico. Wasps against Harlequins.
Yeah, Wasps will have to put in a team performance. Dai Young said that his team don't respond well to having a bit of time off, so that's time off done for that lot. Harlequins played well at Gloucester. The Demons of last year, where they conceded 7 tries against Wasps. This will be a mouth-watering tie. You've got Danny Carrick up against Dan Robson, Marcus Smith up against Cipriani. It's going to be an intense battle. As to who will win, I'm not going to make a prediction because I've got conflict of interest, apparently. But I guess you'll see it. Tune in 2:30 Sunday, BT Sport 1.
Rugby will be the winner, as it always is. Yeah, 4 games, 4 of the 6 games live on BT Sport this weekend. I think that just about covers it. We've made our way halfway down my Fortnum & Mason biscuit barrel, so we've done pretty well.
Yeah, thank you. Just carb loading. Yeah, for the weekend.
It's for the flight to Philadelphia because I'm heading out there tomorrow. And we'll have another cup of tea. But thank you for coming around to my kitchen.
Thank you for having me. We'll see you. We'll see you same time next week.
Yeah, not in my kitchen though.
But no, I'm not invited
somewhere
back.
Else. Thank you for listening. We are back next week. It's Hugo and Austin. Are you going to Austin's kitchen?
Probably not.
His is probably slightly bigger than mine, I suspect. No, you're back in the studio next week, I'm being told. Remember, the pod will be out every Thursday morning, so make sure that you subscribe and get it delivered straight to your device. And if you have enjoyed it, leave us a 5-star rating. If you haven't enjoyed it, please still leave us a 5-star rating. Review it on iTunes. Thank you, Hughes.
Cheers, Nick. Thanks for having me.
See you all next week. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.